With Mother's Day just around the corner, are you thinking about something truly special for your mama? I am. And let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? So here is how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email, and these can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. And then she can either type her response or record her voice. And then mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And then guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. You get to preserve her voice and her stories for your family. I mean, imagine you're discovering stories about her youth, her adventures, the challenges that she had to overcome in life, the way that you two connect and relate, and also the way her grandkids will relate to her. I mean, this book becomes a legacy and something that you and your future generations can truly treasure forever. I mean, your mom's given you a lifetime of stories, so this is your chance to give her a way to share them. And not only am I creating one for my mom now for Mother's Day, but for my dad's birthday, as my dad is turning 80 this year, and I like to gift him with sentimental gifts. You know, he's gifted my family and I so many treasured moments. So I wanted to create something for us to collect these memories and for my future kids, for them to know my father's voice. So beautiful, sentimental, easy to use. Let me emphasize, easy to use. And you can truly create one for anyone. Your mom, your dad, your bestie, maybe even you. So check out mylifeinabook.com and use code MAGIC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code MAGIC for 10% off today. I'm all about that fuss-free glam. Give me makeup that's versatile and feels like air on my skin and has ingredients that love my face, that's good for my face. You know, clean ingredients. And don't even get me started on mascaras because I do want them bold and lengthening. And so we have Thrive Cosmetics, which I've been using since 2020, obviously because I appreciate their foolproof products that make it really easy to apply for any skill level. And they have a full line of makeup to refresh your everyday look, but also they give back. Every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates products and funds to help communities thrive. Hence why it's Thrive Cosmetics, C-A-U-S-E, Medics. Thrive Cosmetics and Bigger Than Beauty Skincare are not just makeup brands, they're a whole vibe. They're all about empowering us to rock our confidence, and when you support them, we are helping other communities thrive. Their stuff is not only easy to use, but no nasties, zero parabens, sulfites, phthalates. They are 100% vegan and cruelty-free. Let's talk lashes. Thanks to Thrive's liquid lash extensions, I must say that my lashes are just so beautiful and lush. It adds length, there are no clumps, and also guess what? It slides right off with warm water, so no raccoon eyes here. And I appreciate they have nourishing ingredients that support longer, stronger, and healthier looking lashes over time. And it's a unique formula they use that creates these tubes around each eyelash to lengthen them. We've had problems in the past with the link, but the link does work now. Refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/magic. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/magic for 10% off your first order.
But when you're in that state, the LSD kind of opens you up to like how beautiful it is and stops being a scary thing. And that's a lot of it with the spiritual path is too, is can you love the fear as much as you love the joy, right? Can you love the pain as much as you love the happiness or the pleasure? And so LSD really opens that up, and that's what I was feeling, is like not scared or not sad that my life is so short in comparison to, say, the mountain that is Annapurna being millions of years old. It's more so a thankfulness that I get to experience that thought at all, that realization that, wow, I'm something right here, seeing some other aspect of myself.
that's not even just a thought. I mean, that's really, truly just an embodiment of feeling of oneness.
Yeah, like, that's what it felt like.
Oneness.
Now let the magic begin. Hello, and Jaima Yomis. It's Raquel, and also Namaste, as they say in Nepal, which, wow, what a wild week, an intense week, a powerful week, a very transformative week, as no big deal, I just trekked one of the most intense trails in the world. I trekked the Himalayan mountains with my friends Vishuddha Das and Haley Madison, and we trekked the Annapurna range. Actually, I'm definitely exaggerating it, though of course it was super intense, and supposedly the deadliest. It was not a difficult, scary one, not even though there were indeed cliffs, and I indeed had to face my fear of heights and other fears and face a lot of other things along the way. It's definitely a very manageable one for, I feel like, most anybody. And so if you're ever interested in trekking, I highly recommend, though it is super physically demanding, of course, depending on your fitness level. Well, actually, regardless of your fitness level, it's safe and it's beautiful. There are so many other people that you'll pass along the path, and there's guides, and it's just indeed a good one for people to start with, I think, if they want to trek or they want to get into trekking. And I'm so thankful I went with friends, and so I highly recommend, if you have that experience, you either go with a group, because there's a lot of different groups, or just get a few friends together and hire a guide, hire some porters. They carry the big bag and all the other luggage that you have. Vishuddha and Haley literally live out of their backpacks, and so they had all of their stuff, and Haley would like donate stuff along the way, and so the porters would carry all of our stuff pretty much. We would just have one lighter bag. You should have one porter per person. We only had two, and I was like, oh, we could definitely use one more. But the reason why Annapurna is the deadliest trek, I think that is when you get past the base camp, or it's because of the avalanches. During the winter time, there are avalanches. Other than that, if you go in the springtime, or if you go right at the tail end of November, which I guess seems to be the best time, even though it is super cold still, so beautiful, and no avalanches. By the way, I am outside right now. You can hear the birds singing the song of Mama Bali. I figured that would be a beautiful touch. But this recording with this guest you're about to hear, just so you know, we were in Nepal in a hotel room. I did not have my recording equipment because I left it back in Bali. So we used my phone voice memo, my iPhone X. So I just wanted to slip that in there as a disclaimer, but it's still such a powerful episode, and you hear it all. This was indeed one of my most divinely guided experiences that I have ever endeavored, for a variety of reasons. You know, I was processing a lot. I mean, we're always processing something, right? But I feel like there has just been even bigger hits, in a sense, or this has been just a greater transitional season in my life, in family life, in career life, in love life. And so there was a lot that I was able to receive so much clarity, because when you're on the trek, it's so beautiful. It's also super physically demanding. So all of the voices and the noises you have in your mind, they kind of float away for a little bit, and you're focused on the trek. And then all of a sudden, when you get somewhere, you like receive these insights and clarity, and it's just nice to have those moments of silence to hear the deeper wisdom, or to feel more, or to experience something more deeply. I wasn't going to spiritually bypass any of this. I was like, I'm going to face it, and I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to approach this in a way that no longer stays inside of me energetically, but finally releases, so I can have clarity, move on and move forward, and also rise up. That was indeed the most liberating for everyone,
because it was like we just trekked probably what 40 miles or more, I don't even know, so many steps every single day, nearly 40,000 steps according to my health app, going up and down these insane hills for miles. And it was so liberating to just make it to that top. Like, this is everything that we've had in our hearts and in our minds for months. And then to make it to that top space and just sit there for a while and write and meditate and be present again. It's just so amazing how much clarity you receive when you kind of silence your mind for a bit and you're super present in something else, perhaps something physically demanding like a workout or doing some sort of mind exercises like a puzzle or meditating, something to get your mind off all of the noise, and then suddenly hit a peak point where it's like you finish the puzzle, you finish the workout, and you finally have some silent space. And it's like during that moment where you finally completed whatever you wanted to complete, or you arrived at your destination, the insights you receive, transformative, empowering, and I believe needed for your soul's expansion, your human's expansion in some way. So that was a powerful experience. Plus, I can't believe how much fried rice I ate. I like rarely eat fried anything, and all had all this fried rice, fried spring rolls. But you know what? When you are trekking that much, your body craves some heavy calories. Well, at least mine did. Heavy calories, but super light, just so you can keep trekking until you get to dinner time. And then I like some volume. But I'm so thankful for my friends, my very conscious, compassionate, and patient friends who I trekked with. My knees gave out on me. And so I, especially towards the end, just I kept getting slower and slower and slower because I needed to be patient with them in the moment. And that's the thing as well. I had to let some thoughts go about certain things so I can be really present with every step pretty much, because it was painful. And they were well ahead, yet between they would stop and wait for me for a bit just to make sure I wasn't too far behind. It was so funny how handicapped I was towards the end of it. I'm literally limping. The porters had to carry me on their back down to the hot spring for a bit just so I can experience the hot spring, because I was like, I don't know if my knees can take downhill anymore. See, the thing is, I started to love going uphill. I would like speed through uphill because I loved it so much. I hated going downhill because that was really hard on my knees. That was very interesting because, I mean, no one likes uphill, but man, mind over matter. Something is just mentally challenging and it just feels exhausting versus actual physical pain. You're going to always take the mentally challenging version. Anyway, I did go on the trek with today's special magical guest, one of my friends for a long time now, actually. I've known him for 3 years or so. Vishudadas. He's also been on this podcast twice before, back in 2017 under the name Koi Fresco. But a while ago, he changed his name to Vishuda, and I like to call him Vish. I think I'm the only person that calls him that. So, in this episode, you're going to hear about our experience and also an experience with standing in the presence of the living incarnate of the goddess Kali. Yes, we stood right before a little girl, the Nepalis referred to as the living goddess, named Kumari. And she just happens to be a breathing extension, they believe, as the goddess Kali. And we'll talk about Kali and also his experience at the top of the trek as he was dancing with Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Very expansive trip. We also talk about LSD and other psychedelics and more. And then he also really encouraged that I check out Pashupatinath Temple. So at the time of the recording, I hadn't seen it yet. I saw it the next day. And he just for me to witness cremation ceremonies. Wow. Just to see an actual physical human suit that has many stories that has been told, other people who surround this human, that love this human and their experience, and just to lay there before us all, to be covered up, carried to this bed of wood, which they would lay the human in the middle and then stack some hay to cover the body as it burns. And you feel their physical existence remain but dissipate while their energy just rises in the smoke. It's as if you feel their soul, or you see their soul is just rising with the smoke. I mean, it's a human body, so there's a lot of smoke. And so the ashes do fall on your clothes, on your skin, and you can feel it with you. But it's not disgusting by any means. It's very beautiful and powerful because it just reminds you that their energy remains here, even though they are gone. And this is something we know, but it also reminds you how temporary this human experience is. When they would burn these bodies, I would just hope that they truly lived the way they wanted to live, and more so that they truly loved, that they truly allowed themselves to be so human, because we're always going to be a soul, we're always spiritual, yet we are these incarnates, these extensions of the Creator, for the Creator to experience whatever the Creator wants to experience. This is at least my belief. My world is completely different than theirs, yet the Creator wants to experience their world and my world just the same. And so we're completely different humans, though we are the same soul. And so whatever human experience you were given and whatever you feel called to do, do that, live that, no matter what it is, because the Creator wants to experience it all. I felt that. Not everybody feels called to go to Nepal or Bali or do yoga. Not everybody feels called to eat a certain way or surround themselves in nature or surround themselves in a city. I mean, if the Creator wants to experience it all, we must honor it all, no matter where we are on this plane, no matter who we are. And so to just live how you want to live, it was just another reminder of me being able to also embrace this human. Because I used to almost just float and fade away in the background as I was like, you know what, it doesn't matter. I'm just still just such a spiritual human. I'm just going to do my thing and meditate and take it easy, yada yada. But was I living? Sure, I was traveling around the world, but was I living? Was I alive? And I've allowed my fire to rise and to live and to be whatever Raquel feels called to be, to do, to become, to embody, and to embrace her beauty, her goddessness, as I want every female to no longer hide, to shift from some of the old programming, her old paradigms of how she needs to be perceived in the world. You know, I was attached and I identified with, all right, I'm a spiritual type person and there's a stigma around it, so I shouldn't be somebody that is posting me in certain ways. That's such old programming. I get to embrace all of me however I want, and I want you to embrace all of you however you want to, because this experience is so short. And so whatever lights you up, do it. Don't stop yourself just because of a certain image that you are attached to or identify with. That way, when it's your time and your body is laying there ready to go, however you intend for your body to continue to exist in this world, whether you want to just allow yourself to become ashes, which I think I do, and I'd like my ashes spread around a forest and maybe the ocean too, just spread around different parts of the world. Or if you do want to go in a casket and be buried underground, like whatever you want to do, allow your soul to be so happy with this human experience because you really lived and you learned. And really, the only way to expand the soul is to really live it up and learn. And I don't mean like go do drugs and go crazy, but anything that isn't sabotaging, because I mean, it's very clear what is sabotaging, what's not. Anything that isn't sabotaging or anything that is risk-taking, allowing yourself to fall in love, allowing yourself to explore the world on your own or do crazy treks, whatever nourishes your soul, do that. Do it. Don't stop yourself because you feel you need to be a certain way. I'm letting go of a lot of Raquel's old stories, and it's so liberating. I'm letting go of a lot of the rhetorics that maybe you might have even fallen in love with when it came to me, and I hope that you continue to love and accept whoever I evolve into, as I will with you, because we're always evolving and changing. That is the one thing that's guaranteed. There's no need to be stagnant. If you do feel stagnant or stuck, perhaps the biggest thing for you to do, the best thing for you to do, is to look at what you are identifying with, that you're holding on to, clinging on to so tightly that you won't let go of. And maybe that's the one thing the universe wants you to let go of, so your soul can continue to have a very expansive experience. Whew. Well, that was a long rant about how I felt when it came to the cremation ceremonies, but there's so much more that it also made me realize. And so be open to new experiences, to tell new stories, and to just live. And I felt like choosing a very simple one today for the Your Own Magic Review of the Week. And this is from Cheryl Ziz, Spiritual Connection. I have listened to Raquel's lovely podcast for several years now. I look forward to her deep and soulful episodes. I listen to several wellness podcasts, but this one pushes the possibilities of learning all sorts of modalities that I have sprinkled into my life and have become habits that are changing my life for the positive. I've awakened my spirituality while using her podcast as a tool. Much love. Beautiful. That's exactly what I've been using this podcast to as well, to experience and try different modalities and sprinkle them in my life, the ones that do resonate. I think that that is what my experience at this time is supposed to be. I think that there are some that are here to maybe experience and be a guinea pig for so many different modalities, to inspire others to try and perhaps even inspire future masters in some way. So that's how I'm feeling right now about this experience. I think that's really, really awesome. And I'm very honored to be a catalyst for you on your spiritual journey. That's another thing, by the way. I do not want to be seen as a spiritual teacher, a spiritual guru, but I'm definitely honored to be a spiritual catalyst for your spiritual journeys. I'd rather just be seen as like a soul sister because I indeed am so human. So, yep, I am so thankful for this review and all the other reviews. All right, so excited for you to listen to this moment with Vishuddha. So I believe it is time to let the magic begin with Vishuddha Das. Imagine if this world did not have any plastic.
A wonderful world.
I know. Do you think that by 2060, that's a possibility?
No.
Really?
No, I don't.
How about 2100?
Yeah, I think by 2100 for
really?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I hope so. I bet that they'll have... You know what? I think that they're going to find, or the universe is somehow going to create some sort of mineral that the second it touches plastic, it evaporates and it just does not exist. Not in any way, shape, or form.
I think scientists discovered certain microbes that eat plastic and like dissolve it completely, but I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. Not 100%. I feel like I've seen it somewhere before though.
Maybe you dreamt it. I feel like that would be kind of a big deal if like that was a thing.
Well, it's easy to do things on a small scale scientifically, but to make it like a large scale project is a whole nother deal. And to make it a worldwide thing is even like farther off. So there's like, I don't know, I read a lot of stuff on like futurology.
Futurology?
Yeah, futurology is like the study of like the future kind of, and like what's going to be coming, like what we're discovering in science.
That's exciting.
Yeah, and so there's lots of, you see tons of random little tidbits every couple of days on like different like simple and effective cures for cancer that have been shown in laboratory results, and like
wow,
microbes that eat plastic and different things like that. Just really uplifting stuff. But then you never really hear about it again because obviously it's not something monetizable or something a corporation wants to invest in.
Of course, because it's a risk. It's a super risk. By the way, speaking of risk, like how toasty are you right now?
I'm great.
Really? I feel like you're going to be burning up in the midst of this podcast.
No, this thing is like a big bear hug.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of loud though. Is it loud?
Nah.
I hope not.
Where do you get this futurology information?
Reddit.
Really?
Yeah,
of
Reddit's
course.
The best.
You're like all
I'm on
about
Reddit,
Reddit.
Like, every day. Reddit's wonderful.
Do you have like people gossiping about Vishuddha on Reddit?
Not that I know of.
I'm gonna check
probably
this out.
Random stuff everywhere, but I just go on there to like read uplifting news and like discovering stuff, especially philosophy. There's
That's
lots
cool.
of good philosophy conversations on there.
What are some of your favorite philosophical philosophies?
Absurdism. Absurdism is really powerful by Albert Camus.
Yeah?
He was like a philosopher. He wrote a book called The Stranger.
I feel like I've heard of that.
Stranger is really good.
Okay.
It's like a storybook, but it's very philosophical. It's just basically about how the absurd nature of existence and the purposelessness of it, I guess. But not in a scary way, more of like an incredible way. Like, look how crazy and ridiculous this all is.
Life is so ridiculous. Life is so absurd.
Yeah.
Everything that we're doing. Our trek was so absurd.
That was.
Who are we? Why did we do that? But that
Why
was the
are
best
these
thing
little
in my
humans
life.
Pushing themselves to their limit just to get up into the mountains and look at the mountains from closer up?
Truly the limit. My
Truly.
Knee is out.
Yeah, you can't walk right now. You got like a stick leg.
I know. I'm limping. Oh, poor me. All right. Let's ground. Let's pray. How do you usually start your prayers?
I don't really do prayers, to be honest. I do. I set like intentions and mantras in my head. Like when I do my morning, like puja and arti and stuff like that. But I don't like pray or anything.
Will you guide us through one?
Oh, it's mainly, honestly, it's not, it's like chanting a mantra over and over again.
Okay.
Like,
what's like, one mantra that comes to mind right now?
One of the biggest ones that I use is Jai Ma Kali, Jai Ma Kali, Jai Ma Kali.
That's how Jai Ma Kali.
Yeah.
I introduced the podcast, Jai Ma. There's something about that introduction, that greeting, that is so beautiful. And apparently it also does reference the divine feminine in it.
Yeah. Well, Jai Ma is it's a short version of Jai Ma Kali. So Ma and Jai Ma is a reference to Ma Durga, who is one of her forms is Kali, Kali Ma.
Speaking of Kali, we have to share the story. Let's do a little prayer, and then we'll go straight into the Kali story.
Let's do it.
Okay. Jai Ma Kali, may we use this valuable time to deeply connect and share, deliver a shared truth, share whatever message that comes through. And may I just express my gratitude, immense gratitude for Vishuddha. So much for not only this trek, but also just being an amazing friend in my life for all these years now. And to finally have this experience together and for everything that, all his support this entire time. I'm so thankful that he's taking this time to do this podcast for the yomis. And so whatever unfolds, may it be so. Aho.
Aho.
That feels good.
Oh, I like it.
Kali.
Kali. Kali
we
Ma.
We saw an incarnation of her.
We did.
No
we
big
did.
Deal.
No big. You know what's crazy is this week has been so insane that I forgot about that.
Same.
Until you just brought it up. I was like, oh yeah, we met what the Nepalese consider to be an incarnation, a physical incarnation of the mother.
Yeah.
Kumari, that's her name. Kumari.
Kumari. Yes.
Yeah. That was really interesting.
That was fierce. That was intense. And it's interesting that we all had a different perspective as to what her energy represented. Also, I love that you prefaced it by saying that the Nepalese feel that she is the incarnation.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because I was like, how do I feel about this?
Yeah, that's the thing I think a lot of people is they think the way a certain culture sees something is universal or we take it as universal, but really it's understanding it's part of that culture, you know, it's part of the Nepalese culture to see it that way.
Yeah.
It's not something, you know, you'd see around the world or, you know, in America or somewhere else for certain people, but in certain areas of the world they have their own views and their own practices, so I think it helped by prefacing it that way too, is like the Nepalese people see it that way. It helps you understand not only where it's from, but how it can kind of stem from the people in that region.
Mm-hmm.
And then also it helps you not to group a bigger picture together, you know, not to like throw everybody who might believe in Kali as, oh, they must all also believe and see the mother as this girl, you know.
Exactly. Some people might actually, I was wondering if there's anybody that took offense to it.
Yeah.
That might even be in India. That it's like, you know, they're deeply rooted in their Hindu beliefs that are completely different, yet very similar. Where does it, do you know where Kali stems from? Because I know she's the divine goddess, the death, the destroyer, the death of the ego, the death of...
Yeah, Kali Ma is just one of the many incarnations of Durga. So Durga is essentially the divine feminine, the Devi, Shakti in her many forms. But she shows most prominently in the union between Shiva and Parvati.
Yeah.
So Shiva and Parvati is like that divine union, that divine marriage between the two.
Mm-hmm.
But through that, Durga manifests as Parvati and as Kali. And depending on, again, which sect of Hindu philosophy you follow, some people see one as above the other or the original, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing with, let's say, like Lord Vishnu, who's like the preserver of existence. The Hare Krishnas, the monks, see Lord Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead. So they see Krishna as above Vishnu, whereas the rest of Hindus see Vishnu as like the originator and Krishna as an incarnation. So
yeah.
Same with Kali. Some see Kali as like the origination. Some see Kali as an incarnation of Durga. Regardless, yeah, Kali is essentially, well, Kala is where her name stems from, the K-A-L-A, which represents time. Kala means time. Infinite, and she in her color especially represents that infinite nature. So the reason I think Kali is so powerful is because she represents just the absolute fierceness of love, of devotion, of mother's passion to help her children awaken at all costs. You know, she's so viciously caring about her children and about this existence and about helping us awaken and slaying our own internal demons and removing our ego illusions, that she can get so lost in it, she almost destroys the planet. You know, that's how much love she has for her children, which we are. And that's why a lot of the depictions of Kali show her, you know, stepping on Shiva, because she was going so crazy slaying these demons that Shiva had to pretty much put himself in her path to stop her. That's how much love she has. It's just like a level of passion that we can't fathom as humans. You know, she's that perfect divine archetype representing our own personal ability to awaken and rid ourselves of these demons and of these illusory ways of living that can easily harm us.
I see why she keeps popping up into my world now, because I grew up thinking that the way to show your love is to be so soft and gentle and just approach it in that very nurturing way in how we have this picture idea of what a motherly loving figure is. We think sweet, we think flowery, we think dresses and baked cookies, you know, but no, there's another kind of love that has the fire, that has the passion, that has that fierceness behind it. And that indeed keeps popping into my world for whatever reason. What's interesting as well, it just popped into my mind, is when we had the retreat, something happened when we went out to a waterfall, and in a sense, some of the girls, it seemed, were being treated unfairly by some of the locals, and the locals took like $15 from them because the girls didn't end up using their service. And like my Kali energy, my fire, my fierceness like came out. A side that people that listen to this podcast do not often see, because I have a fire. And like, I ground, I'm gentle when I'm talking here.
Yeah.
But I've got this fierceness. And so to really just embrace that fire, I mean, I am a double Leo after all. Like I've got a lot of fire. And so to just embrace that Kali energy inside is so freeing, to know that there's another way to show love.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because coming into that fierceness, it requires a lot of internal practice. You know, a lot of, I think in the Western world, our fierceness is negative.
Yes.
So I think that's also why so many people, when they first see Kali, they're like, wow, she's really scary. Mm. She looks like a nightmare. Like, why would I want to look at this picture? Why would I want to devote to this picture, have it hanging in my room? It scares so many people.
Yeah.
And it's because we associate fierceness with fear, or fierceness with negativity. Mm-hmm. And we're not used to seeing fierceness as like an empowering part of our lives. That's why Ram Dass calls like spiritual practice fierce grace. You know, fierce grace is what it takes. Aww. And it's what we are really striving towards, is to have fierce grace, to like seek that fierce grace, to experience fierce grace. Is that how deep that power goes, how deep that experience goes, how deep that surrender goes in your own life, that devotion goes. If you can like allow that fire to burn within you, no matter what you do, you know, you can be fiercely meditating if it takes it. Just how much devotion do you have to it? How much compassion and how committed to it are you? So same thing when you see, I guess you could say, students being taken advantage of. your fierce love takes over, right?
Yes.
You can be in that soft space of love 24/7, but when that fierceness has to come out, if you are on your path and if you're in alignment with your practice, you know that you're doing it in a progressive way and in a way that helps you and helps others rather than it being an inherently negative thing, which is, I think, how, unfortunately, a lot of the Western world, again, sees the idea of anything fierce at all.
That is so true. It's very triggering for a lot of people.
It is.
When I posted a fierce photo, there was definitely an interesting reaction to it as well. When people have created an image of you of being so gentle, I almost want a tattoo of that fierce grace. Like,
yes.
Those two words, there's something about that that
yeah.
was like, I don't know if you felt it with me, but
yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, oh my
god. It's powerful.
That is so powerful, fierce grace. There's something about Kali that just keeps coming up.
Mm.
A lot of different synchronicities with Kali that just kept popping up in Bali and even prior to Bali. And then I come here and we just happen to walk into this
yeah.
home and I had no idea what we're doing. I'm just like, sure, Vishuddha, let's go on here.
Let's do it.
And it just happens to be where this living goddess
yeah.
is that happens to be an incarnation of Bali according to the Nepali folk.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we left that place. So we were just there for a while and I was like, I don't feel like her here. I don't feel like there's anything. It feels almost tainted with a lot of tourist energy, so I kind of want to go and continue on, but you guys want to stay, so I'll just chill, I guess. And then we went on and it was just beautiful and we saw at a shrine of Kali and this guy was talking about Kali. He was an older man that I thought he had another agenda, but he actually didn't. He had a pure
He's just a nice old man.
He was just a nice man talking about Kali, but I always have a guard up because I'm like, all right, you want to take my time because you want money or something more,
especially when traveling too,
because of traveling
you have to kind of have your guard up a bit.
Yeah, when you're a tourist and we've been around the block.
Yeah, yeah,
you know
exactly.
what I mean, so we have our guard up. We weren't born yesterday. And then we went and we just walked around for a while and you just had this random nudge.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it was just a spontaneous ping. You're like,
I want to
go back.
It was mother's nudge.
It was mother's nudge.
Which is interesting, too, because... So, I've been practicing Hindu Dharma, or the Hindu faith, now for close to 3 years. And the branch I practice in is called Vedanta, or Dvaita Vedanta, the non-dual path of Vedanta. But the temple in which I study, we are students of Ramakrishna. His name's Paramahansa Ramakrishna. He was an Indian saint in the late 1800s. And he was a massive, massive bhakta, or loving devotee of Mother Kali. So Mother Kali like runs through it with the entire temple. We learn about her all the time and about Ramakrishna's infinite like obsession. Not even obsession, but just deep, deep, pure love for Mother and seeing Mother and everything and crying for Mother and calling to Mother. He would often say, to awaken, you have to long for Mother the same way a drowning man longs for a breath of air. It has to be that much of a need. It can't even be just a maybe or a want. It has to be, again, that absolute fierceness, that commitment. And so ever since then, it's interesting because before that, I had never really known who Mother Kali was. And then once that happened, everywhere I've traveled now, I've always seen her. So when I first went to Bali, the very first water temple I went to, the very first one, it was a very small one, like far up past the main rice paddies, far up past the main, I guess you could say, tourist water temples.
Which
where
is
everybody
best to
goes.
Do.
Yeah, it was a
yeah.
very small local one. We only saw locals there. It was just four of us, a few of my Hindu friends. And so we went there, and of course, the only deity at the bottom, it's a very small waterfall, is Mother Kali.
Of course.
The only one.
Of course.
And so, of course, I was like, oh, yeah, Mother's here. Not surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And then, same thing, first day in, again, Nepal now. Come to Nepal, go to the square as the very first thing to do, and here's where Mother's physical incarnation lives. So it's synchronistic, but for me, it's like, of course she's going to be here. Like, of course she's going to be in my path again. Of course she's going to keep presenting herself to me. Which is a really kind of interesting thing to question why that is. But yeah, that's how it kind of felt when we were in front of... remember, we thought the statue was Kali initially, but it was Bhairav. It's a version of Shiva. So it's
why was he talking about Kali for so long? Right?
Because it's like the masculine form of Kali.
Okay.
Not specifically, but it looks almost identical to Kali.
It was a very unique one,
yeah. Yeah, so it looks very much like Mother Kali.
Mm-hmm.
But then once that happened, like you said, I just had this kind of draw to go back. I felt like if we went back, we might see her, and we did.
That's what you thought. You're like, maybe we might see her. So
I just had a feeling that she would. I knew she was there. Like, I could feel Kumari's energy, like, when we were there, but she wasn't showing herself.
See, I couldn't. Yeah. I didn't feel like she was
around. I knew she was there. I could just sense her presence, I guess you could say. Because that's the house. And I doubt, you know, it's such a deeply religious thing that she would be able to leave the house, especially as a young child. Mm. So I could kind of feel that she was in there. But I didn't know which room. You know, there are so many different rooms at the very top.
Maybe she just wasn't around the top. Maybe she was, like, in her own little...
Yeah, it had to be somewhere. But after that, I was just like, we have to go back before we leave. Definitely to just see. Just for me, it's just intuition, especially with traveling. You get, I don't know, I feel like I really try to trust my intuition as much as I can to, like, go places. Even if I have to go back to a place again, it's always kind of worth it to me. And that's why, I guess, situations like that present themselves.
So worth it. When she was at that top, the energy was so different.
It was Kali's energy. It was Mother's energy.
It was fierce.
Yeah.
Then put our phones away because you're not allowed to take a picture of her.
Yeah, no pictures of her.
Totally honor that. Super sacred. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm thankful for that so we could be so present in that moment where she came out and looked at everybody. She just presented herself for how long was it? Maybe like 10, 15 seconds?
Maybe 15 seconds, yeah, 20 seconds max. It
was 20 seconds max. But that short window of time was so powerful. It's embedded in my brain and I'm never going to forget it. And I made eye contact with her for a millisecond. I know that wasn't good. I don't think that was good.
Why is that?
I don't think you're allowed to. I don't think
you can make eye contact with her, I'm really? Pretty sure. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because we literally made, like, eyeballed eye, like, you and I right now. Like, it was a millisecond.
And it's interesting, like you said, how everybody's, because of our own psychology, our perception of who she is and what she is and how she felt is totally different between everybody there.
Everybody had their own different version. Yeah. I'm trying to remember Haley's, but yours was interesting and then mine was definitely very different. So mine, I looked at her and I was like, her fierceness, which I now also see after talking with you, because that, you know, you can definitely skew your perception or just change it a bit, alter it a bit if something does seem more light or does resonate more.
Yeah.
But in that moment, I was like, oh, she's like a six-year-old girl, by the way, this living goddess. She's 6 years old.
Yeah, she's very, very young.
She's very, very young. And, you know, the world knows who she is. She gets...
She's taken care of by the government.
She's taken care of by the government. Yeah, and so in my mind, when I saw her, I was like, she doesn't feel free. She doesn't feel like a child. And she didn't seem like she wanted to be there.
Yeah.
She had this, like... Ugh, this is, I do not like to do this. I'm about to cry. I don't want to see you guys right now. I just want to, like, go and live my life. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
And you felt something.
And so for me, it was absolutely day and night different. For me, it was like, as if she was saying, I am Mother Kali. I am the infinite. Mm-hmm. Like, feast your eyes on me. See this fully. Feel this. I hope this makes you uncomfortable. Like, can you take what you're seeing right now? Can you accept what you're feeling right now in my presence, you know? And just, to me, it was like, whoa, so powerful. Oh, my gosh.
And when you said that, I felt so jealous of you because I was like, man, I wish I saw that.
Yeah, and I think, too, because, like, I was looking for, like, any kind of flicker of, like, feeling of, like you said, like, sadness or fear, and her gaze was just stone, like, pure, just, like, which is mother's fierceness, that pure fierceness, unflinching, unwavering for that entire 20 seconds. And then she just turned around like it was nothing to her and went back into the room. Like, that's why for me, like it was she knew exactly what she was and she could feel it and she literally embodied it.
She's like, this is it.
Yeah.
You guys see me. But that guy that was outside when we were looking at the one shrine that I talked about earlier that I was worried he had another agenda. He was in there.
He actually came in there after we went there.
Well, that's what surprised me. I was like, wait a second. He never even told us to go there. He truly was just so happy to talk about Kali.
Yeah.
Like, it's hilarious. He was just so in love with that. And then he goes in there and he actually happens to be hired by the government to talk about Kali. And so I'm like, oh, okay. And I asked him, I was like, this was before I talked to you about everything. Yeah. I was like, did she like being there? He's like, she didn't seem happy today. No, she didn't, you know, like, so I guess maybe she has, I mean, she's a human, so she has different sides to her where she's probably more willing to do it than others. Mm-hmm. But regardless, she still had a fierceness and like, I know who I am. And so, hi. bask in this for a second.
Yeah.
You know?
Another thing, too, is with Kali, like, Kali doesn't even represent happiness. Like, in no way does she ever appear happy. She appears like she's screaming a lot of the times, like, holding herself back from, like, exploding almost with so much, like, rage and anger, but not in a negative sense, in a loving sense, you know, that just intensity that we can... It's hard for us to fathom in our human form because we rarely feel those feelings at the same like level of devotion and care. So for me, it's like reading so much about her and studying so much the nature of Kali. Yeah, like you said, it's really interesting to... I think it's also good to be able to talk to people about how they see these things because it's all based on our perception, right? I have a lot of study and meditation on her, so I'm going to see Kumari in a different light than someone who has... no study on it, or very little study on it, or who is seeing it in a more humanized way, where I'm seeing it more in a religious way, because I've been, like I said, spending 5 months in India, so...
And aren't you also baptized Hindu, or something like
that? Oh, yeah, initiation, so initiation. It's called the Diksha in Hindi, but it's like receiving initiation from Diksha. A guru and everything,
Baptized Diksha.
Reborn Hindu.
you are. Wow. Okay.
All right. I mean it when I say that Fabletics actually looks absolutely phenomenal on every body shape. There's something that they do that highlights the most beautiful parts of every shell. I am in love with their high-tech SculptKnit advanced leggings. Ugh, and by the way, you can get two of those for just $24 when you go to fabletics.com/magic. In fact, you can get two pair of any leggings for just $24 when you use RURL. I mean, I'm sure you're very familiar with Fabletics. They're kind of like everywhere these days. And... you might as well just try them out. Honestly, what a steal. $2 for $24. You have hundreds of styles to choose from. When you go to their site, go to the bottoms, click on leggings and 7/8, and then look at all of the high-waisted or even the mid-rise power hold leggings. I know. Some of my favorites, though, are the cashels. I like the uniqueness of the bottom legging part. And look at their high-waisted SculptKnit dot leggings. I believe I wore them the other day when I did a little yoga flow on my Insta story. And I'm telling you, they're cute. They shape you quite well. I feel phenomenal in them, not gonna lie. And yeah, Fabletics. Good job, Kate Hudson, for creating such an amazing brand. They have some fun fall colors for us right now, which I very much appreciate. Plus, their sports bras are so comfortable. I am pretty well endowed in that area, and I need something of high impact for pretty much anything I do. Keep them in there. Yeah, so they have high impact, medium impact, and low impact bras for you. And one thing I like about their site is I like to go click on the outfits, and then you just get even better deals when you buy certain outfits together. So if you are interested in two pairs of yoga pants for just $24, go to fabletics.com/magic, as they offer affordable, high quality, very stylish clothes for both men and women. And yeah, you can shop for pants and leggings and joggers and tops and tees for pretty much any fitness you want to do and at any fitness level. And they are always providing new outfits every single month. And what I love, honestly, is their Fabletics VIP program, because I actually, even with the VIP program, walked into the store, and because I had $50 credit on my VIP program, I walked out with a really, really cute jacket for just like $30 when it was like $80. So yeah, thanks Fabletics for being super innovative.
Well, I want to shift gears a second because we just have to talk about... well, I guess, you know, we'll lead into it a little bit because I definitely want to talk about LSD and psychedelics, because your experience with all of that is so fascinating.
Yeah.
And I am curious to explore, because I've only done half a mushroom with Ali in Kauai. And so that literally did like nothing, but just had a nice long meditation where the Dalai Lama meditated, you know?
Nice.
Yeah, I told you about it, right? Because it's sacred.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll just talk about the trek for a moment. Yeah, and then, because when you got to the top, that's where you had experience.
I had some LSD.
Yes! We indeed had embraced Lucy and the sky with diamonds up in the sky in Annapurna area.
I felt it was a good place to, a good way and place to celebrate was to dive deeper into myself and into the experience. And we had such a limited time there too. You know, if we would have, I probably wouldn't have taken LSD up there if we had a few days to stay at Annapurna Base Camp and like take it all in. But we only had a few hours. So for me,
we did.
And that's the power of psychedelics. If you use them consciously and intentionally, is that they can act as these almost, I guess you would say,
time warps.
These time warps of spiritual tools that can help you not only take in experiences more deeply, but almost like you said, shift time and slow time down, or even speed time up so that you process more of what you're seeing and experiencing in a shorter amount of time. So whereas I could have maybe taken in 3 days of meditation or so and thought and processed what was going on and what it was like to be at this colliding, powerful, volatile place on the planet where two continents are literally meeting and pushing these mountains higher in the air than ever before. I mean, this is literally the highest mountain range on the planet. If I would have had more time, like I said, I wouldn't have used LSD, but I had it in my possession. You know, I have it with me. And I figured since I only have a few hours, I might as well do what Timothy Leary says, turn on, tune in and drop out, something like that, and just kind of let it speak to me. And that's kind of what the thing was, is since I was there, why not utilize this medicine and let the mountains kind of talk to me for a bit and let me be the student instead of me try to control the experience, which is what we almost always do 99% of the time in our lives.
You were so patient during that entire trek, by the way. So We'll go to the trek, but we're talking LSD now. So you know what? We're going to skip ahead. We'll talk about the trek in a little bit, but
Gotta get to the juicy stuff first.
We'll just get to the juice. We'll cut straight to it. I'll give them a quick summary. We had a long trek up there. Every day we walked about 10 to 12 miles uphill, downhill. My knee started to really, really cause me a lot of problems. I was way behind. Vish was always like the very first one. Vishada, I call him Vish. So he was always like way ahead, even though he also has a pretty hurt knee too, but he's been living on it. Anyways, long story short, I'm very thankful for his patience with me during that entire time. And yeah, there's not too much to say about the trek, minus the fact that there were a lot of moments internally for each of us that we could probably talk about. But when we get to the top, that's when a lot of stuff started to unfold for both of us. Like, definitely. I was processing a lot. You had your experience with LSD and it was so beautiful to witness.
Yeah.
So beautiful to witness. So did you record two videos on it too as well?
Yeah, I filmed two videos on LSD.
So I don't know when those are going to be out, but
they'll be out. Depending on when this comes out, they'll definitely be out. Yeah, they'll be out sometime in December, January area.
Oh, perfect.
But for sure they'll be out.
Okay. So you're going to have to definitely keep your eye out for both of those because you talked about very interesting topics, as always.
Yeah.
It was just interesting because I asked you about your experience. And I think you were still like processing it or something.
Yeah, but,
like,
I was still in the midst of it when you asked me. And I was I can't answer that yet.
Because
it's still happening.
I can't. But the thing is, like, and your answer and just the way you present yourself is so friendly and kind. And you don't feel like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. You know, it's like, thank you. Okay, I got you. I understand.
Yeah, no judgment ever.
Yeah, exactly. And you truly like are the real deal and live by that. And it's so beautiful to see. And it's refreshing to have around for a male energy, because I know a lot of females that feel that have that too, and it's just so nice and refreshing to be around, like Haley as well. But like, it's so rare to have that male energy that embodies that.
I think it's just because, you know, I think it's only a rare thing in men, at least, because we don't take a lot of time to ourselves. And that for me is, you know, spending a year in jail when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and then living on my own for the past couple of years. I spent a lot of time in solace, and so it gave me a lot more space to be patient with myself. Mm-hmm. And then my last relationship was really a learning lesson too of inner patience. And so all that combined led to a space where it's a lot easier to be patient than it might have been for me just even a few years ago, you know.
Wow.
I think that's something a lot of men need to take more, I think, interest in, especially is taking more space for themselves in their own isolation, because men are very social in the sense they feel like they always have to be around their friends or be with somebody, you know, rather than hanging out on their own and being in their own space.
Well, even if they are an introvert, let's say, and they like to be alone, do they really take that time to really dive deep within themselves. And I think that's the scariest part.
Yeah, a lot of men that are introverts, but they're online and playing video games or like on forums and stuff chatting. It's always us trying to like fill
Not
our time.
Not just men, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, everybody.
Women
lots
will
of people.
Try to block the real stuff that's going on with finding forms of entertainment in other ways, even if they're an introvert. Because I've had experiences myself as an introvert, like when I realize that I am trying to suppress something and not just face something and let something go. I'm trying to suppress something when I overconsume. I'm like, I'm overconsuming right now. What am I hiding?
Yeah, and that consumerism is just what I was going to say. It's a big societal reliance on escapism, on like finding a way to escape.
Exactly.
And I think that's why, I was sober for 5 years until this year when I started traveling and reintroducing psychedelics and plant medicine and such to my life. So 5 years of sobriety, you can't use getting high or getting drunk as an excuse to escape your own awareness. You have to sit with it and process it. So that at least helped me a lot get used to being with myself and being more present whatever I'm doing. Because like you said, so many people, the vast majority of people can be introverts and can be on their own, but they're utilizing escapist methods to basically forget that they're alone, to fill it with something else that distracts them from actually sitting with their own thoughts, their own mind, their own emotions, and processing it in a healthy way.
So not even alone, but alive.
Yeah.
They're forgetting that they're alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're here as humans to experience whatever we're experiencing. We're going to have these challenges, and you're just going to keep facing those challenges until, and everybody listening, most people probably know this, like, it will just continue to come around until you can sit with it and see it and see that pattern that continues to reoccur. I'm curious how you approach facing something and then letting it go. Maybe reoccurring patterns or something that you see in your life or just some sort of perspective you want to shift, a lens you want to shift, or feelings you want to shift, characteristics you've wanted to transform.
I think the hardest part for me was always accepting those things. So the first step is always the hardest for me, was acceptance of like seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
I think for so long I would ignore it completely until it was like right on top of me. Like, I could be ignoring things until it was like crushing me into pure anxiety. And I'm like, I can't breathe. Why? And then I'm like, okay, I have to face this. I have to admit this. I have to accept this. So that's what a lot of us do. And that's what I did for so long, was just deny it until it was right on top of me. So now it's kind of trying to see things before they can grow into these big, giant problems and uproot them at the source. That was always the hardest part for me. And that's what I try to do a lot more of now. Like, a few years ago, over the past few years, my biggest thing was the stubbornness of still learning from others. Because before I was in my last relationship, I was in a space where I was just teaching myself and I was learning online and I was learning from my Swami, and that's pretty much it. I wasn't aware of it at the time, but subconsciously I built this mentality of, I know what I need to know. You know, I don't need to know more. I got it figured out. And so then once new people came into my life, that's just a spiritual ego talking.
Yeah.
Little did I know. Once new people started coming into my life and like saying, hey, this could be done, or this could be changed, or this could be helped, my whole ego mind would be like, no, I got to figure it out. I don't need that help. You're just making it harder for me. You're making it more complicated. All these different excuses to not actually change things that would help me. And it took me a long time to really lubricate back up and open back up to the idea that I can always be taking that kind of constructive criticism from people to help me better myself. And that's a thing I think a lot of us need to learn to do, because we get stuck in our ways. Whether it be our material ways or our spiritual ways, we get stuck in it, and that can really hinder us in a lot of ways.
Oh, that is big. And I love that you just said that. The spiritual ego can be so loud.
It's a nasty little bugger.
It is such a nasty, and mine had been very, very loud for so long, but it was in a different way, very similar in a sense where I was like, I know it all. I've got this. I'm good, guys. I feel okay. Don't worry about me. Though inside, I am not facing all of the sadness that just wanted to be faced and released, just to let go. It's not like it was, it just didn't need to be in there anymore. But I didn't want to take that first step of accepting it.
Yeah. And I think a big thing too is like, I would even call like the facilitator paradox, is once you start to like share these philosophies and teach them, you get this subconscious air of, I can't have any issues or else I can't do what I do. So I know so many other teachers, and I'm sure there's lots of listeners here that like are starting their own personal brands and creating their own, you know, wellness stuff and teaching and things. a big thing is that we get caught in what's called imposter syndrome. You know, an imposter syndrome is the feeling that I don't actually live what I'm teaching, or I don't feel what I'm teaching. Yeah. I feel like maybe if people really knew me, they wouldn't think I was this way. But it's like we're all that big messed up jumble of emotions and thoughts. We're just trying to make the best of it. And the best of it is learning how to teach, learning how to provide in the ways we do. But yeah, so many different spiritual teachers and practitioners that I know have that exact same issue where they feel like if I share this thing or if I try to tell others about it, I have to already have it all figured out. Yeah. And it's like, that's not how it works. We're all figuring it out all the time, but we can still help each other to do so at the same time. So we can be we can be walking both paths at once. Whereas, you know, I thought for a long time I had to be ahead of my own issues all the time, which is almost impossible to do. You can't outrun your shadow, you know.
You definitely cannot ever outrun your shadow. It's going to be lingering there.
It's always there.
But it's extra hard when you are so loved and you receive all these compliments. And I'm like, you know, your audience saw you as, this guy has all the answers to the universe and all my problems in spirituality. And I've also experienced the same thing. And I think that it kind of put me in this box that made me feel, it was probably imposter syndrome or something very similar.
You're thinking maybe like, they think I have it figured out, so why don't I think I have it figured out?
Yeah.
You get those feelings.
Well, and then, well, my mind though would tell me, oh, you got it all figured out, but my heart and my soul was like, you've still got to experience this. And the universe was like, we're going to put you through some shit so you can like really experience what you're teaching.
Yeah.
So you can really, really teach it and really understand it. And guess what? If you don't really know what you're teaching, don't teach it. So now I'm like, all right, I'll listen to people talk about it. But, you know, if I really don't feel it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to teach it.
It's like that. Have you seen that comic of that little cartoon character sipping tea in like the burning house, and it's like, this is fine, and then it's like face starts melting and it's like, everything's okay.
I'm fine
just lying to itself, even though it's like dying, it's being eaten alive. So that's what I always think of. It's like, you don't want to let yourself get to that point. So and what I also realize is that you gain so much more, and you start to see who really is in your life and who really matters, and you make meaningful relationships when you learn to start being vulnerable and talking about it and opening up about it and researching it and entering discussions and going to different places and seeing people, whatever it might be, that helps you heal.
And those people that when you finally like come out of that closet, in a sense, like they end up seeing you, and then they come back around because they're like, oh, you're back to being, you're being honest now. Because people can always feel it vibrationally when a teacher, I mean, there, and I'm obviously not going to name any names, but there are definitely people that I had as guests even, or other teachers that might have YouTube channels, podcasts, whatever, where maybe like there was a little bit of a period of time where I was like super into whatever their message was, but then all of a sudden I'm like, there's something not resonating right now, and I think that something just doesn't feel right or real.
Yeah,
and no judgment, but it just, and maybe they change or something, but like something doesn't feel authentic.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. If you aren't being authentic, people can feel that.
Yeah, it's definitely very noticeable.
It's so noticeable.
That's why I think it was so helpful for me when I went to Australia earlier this year and I spent like 2 months on mushrooms there.
Yes. Okay, back to the psychedelics, because I wanted to segue somehow. Perfect.
But the thing was, is it was really great because when I first got there, a few of the people knew me from what I created on YouTube and like were like, they saw me kind of in a teacher way, but then everyone else didn't know me. So they just saw me as another like hippie at this Australia commune hanging out. So it was really good to like kind of bridge that gap and become both at once. So people could kind of see what I was doing, but also see that I was there to heal also, because I went there to heal and to get out of the space of being a creator and out of my label and out of this idea of like quote unquote teacher and so forth, and just refocus on what mattered to me and my own practice and so forth. So it was really good for me to open up, because I feel like a lot of the times you get caught in wanting to be your label only, and you get stuck in, like you said, you become one dimensional, and when you become one dimensional, you lose your authenticity. So for me, it was like rediscovering my multidimensionality, and that happened, you know, with a huge group of 20, 30 people I spent multiple months with, just laughing and crying and making music with and sipping cacao with and eating mushrooms with. And it was really great to not be just any one of these labels, but to just be and experience the whole of it and like rediscover everything for myself and see all these amazing souls and make lots of new amazing friends.
That is so beautiful. I'm so happy you had that experience.
Yeah, Australia is wonderful.
Oh my gosh, I love Australia so much. And I love that you said that about the multi-dimensionality because we really are. I don't want people to just perceive me as Raquel Mantra, this podcaster who talks about these spiritual woo-woo stuff. Like, there's so much more to me too. This, I'm so human as well that I just like, I try to at least, I just want to show myself on stories and stuff, but you know, it's just people, there's so much more to everybody that you see online. It's almost unfair to create a story and romanticize them.
Yeah.
Whether that be romanticizing them as a teacher or somebody that you see as like this life you want
to
live.
And that's why I think I try to keep it, I feel like what helps me kind of keep almost like a friendship basis with lots of students and like I guess you could say viewers even, is just that I try to keep everything very grounded. Like, I'm not trying to sit up on a pedestal and be like, I'm the spiritual teacher. It's like, no, I'm a hippie. Like, I'm climbing mountains right now. I'm doing acid and I'm eating mushrooms. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing with my life. But if what I do is helping you too, cool, let's do it together. You know,
you're just sharing your messages and your life experience and also like the wisdom that you read and are interested in. And I'm sure the universe has like helped you live that wisdom that you had been consuming all these years as well.
I see it as like walking hand in hand versus like standing up on a pedestal just saying, get up here. Like, well, how do they get up there?
Yeah.
You gotta walk them up there. Just like you're walking yourself up there.
That has actually been my biggest turnoff lately, I think. I've actually just turned some people away on the podcast where I know that they just are looking to raise their status more than just like be one with that, because like people feel that and they see
like you were saying, you're like you're talking about some podcast you want me to be on, and for me it was like, that'd be cool, but I also authentically want to experience an experience with those people and meet them rather than, like you said, just like raise your status or just to be on it, to be on it.
Yeah,
for me it's like I have to actually feel connected to something
to those
like
people,
that
for definitely sure. I get that. And you are at least somewhat connected.
Yeah.
So, LSD.
Back to Lucy.
Okay, wait. Actually, I feel like we should start with one thing that came to mind that I wanted to talk with him about, because I really am interested in exploring the power of psychedelics, because I have a lot of people, a lot of friends that have just really expansive experiences, and I just feel very called to them. Now, if it's something that doesn't resonate with you at all for whatever reason, wonderful. You can just listen with, you know, just from an observer's perspective, but not, you know, no need for you to take any interest, or you don't need to continue the podcast from here, turn it off and move on to the next podcast. All right, lovers, this is what I just learned, is that apparently most people decide to spend their entire lives with someone during this holiday season between Thanksgiving and even all the way till Valentine's Day. Zola actually happens to be, today's sponsor, but also sent me this info, and apparently 96% of couples that decide they're going to tie the knot, well, feel that the process of wedding planning is very stressful, and 86% suffer from stress-induced symptoms like insomnia, breakouts, and it even lowers their sex drive. That would not be fun. So, perhaps, you know, delegate it to someone whose specialty is to help you plan your wedding, whose intention is to make the whole process easier, which would be Zola. And Zola, they alleviate a good portion of this stress with their clean and unique wedding websites, registry, invites, and even a guest list manager, all in one place. And did I mention, by the way, free wedding website designs. And there are hundreds of gorgeous designs. We all have different tastes. And it's so easy. My sister-in-law created her site for my brother and her wedding in minutes. So you can create your site in minutes. And their site also has a frequently asked question page to tackle that awkward question like, are kids invited? So Zola
has the highest rated registry of all time, and not only has an easy way for people to register a gift or find out what they may experience on site, but also a space for honeymoon funds. So if you want to just donate to their honeymoon online, you can do so. And let's say that not every item you registered for was purchased, well, you receive 20% off post-wedding discounts on the goods. They provide beautiful, affordable invites and paper for you, along with free guest list manager, collecting addresses, and tackling all the RSVPs online. Zola has helped 1 million couples on their wedding, and so if you are engaged or someone you know is, or you just want to tie the knot or have a lifelong partner celebration, well, sign up at zola.com/soultribe today and use the promo code PAPER30, one word, no spaces, to get 30% off your invites and paper order. Go to zola.com/soultribe and enter the promo code PAPER30, like the number 30. Don't spell it out, type the number 30 to get $50 towards your order plus 30% off your invites and paper order today. That's zola.com/soultribe and enter the promo code PAPER30. But we're going to talk about psychedelics right now, and I'm just interested in knowing how I can begin to explore more. I'm curious about more of Vishuddha's stories, and I think that mushrooms would be a better one for people to maybe begin with.
So I'll preface it by saying that I'm not an expert in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. This is literally the opinion of a 26-year-old spiritual seeker and sharer of my own life experience. Anything you hear today, don't take it as like fact. You have to do your own research. That's first and foremost. Do your own research completely. Look into your own intuitive calling. If it's there, it's there. If not, it's not. I would say research different teachers like Terence McKenna, Paul Stamets, who's a really popular mycologist right now, and is really good with explaining the benefits of mushrooms, both ones containing psilocybin and ones without.
Yeah, psilocybin. So we'll talk about that for a second. But I didn't mean, by the way, to put you on this pedestal psychedelics. I'm just letting people know that
it's just good to put a warning out there no matter what.
It's so good to put a warning out there.
If this
little
was a
disclaimer.
Video, I'd have a giant like neon sign saying,
of course. Warning. Of course, we have to have those disclaimers. But the reason why I want to talk about this with Vishuddha is, one, well, he's also somebody I deeply trust and, like, you know, just value his opinion. And his experiences are super interesting. But he is somebody when I say I trust, like, he really, I know, does his, like, research deeply. He's not somebody that's just like, oh, this is what I learned from hearsay, all these people. Like, he really is somebody who, he's the real deal. He really does his research, so he's able to thoroughly explain, yet at the same time, it's not like he's studied this so in depth where he's like a master's degree in psychedelics.
I don't have any degrees
in
psychedelics.
It's like, we can relate to him, but at the same time, he also does have great perspectives.
Thank you.
So, mushrooms, okay, so I kind of want to start experimenting with mushrooms a bit just to see what happens.
The first thing with mushrooms is I personally wouldn't suggest somebody start by microdosing. I would suggest them to start with a full trip.
Okay.
Actually tripping, because to microdose is the same, just tell people to start, I guess, to start with, you know, taking a little swig of wine before you start drinking. It's like, well, you don't know what drinking is unless you have you know, you drink and you experience it. Totally different, but that's just kind of, I guess you could say, a little metaphor. But the whole purpose of the psychedelic experience is to basically break down the paradigm by which your mind currently sees reality. So we all have a kind of frame of reference by which we experience everything and react to everything and interact with everything. And the whole purpose of psychedelics is that they open the mind in a way that many of us have not yet had access to. Many of us haven't had time to experience or had the luxury to spend in meditation or these deep spiritual experiences by natural default happening. So the psychedelic experience is more so a like a slingshot into the depths of your own subconscious and psyche and into the void of existence itself, but in the most beautiful way. So that's why it's so important, if you're going to do it, to kind of go into it fully, to go into the trip. And that's also why, if you decide to do psychedelics, it needs to be something that you're really committed to. So when I first started doing them when I was young. I wasn't doing them consciously, but like you said, me and my friends, before we did it and we researched for like a month straight what the benefits were, what the pros and cons were, we weighed it out, and then we realized that it was definitely worth it. We should do it. But you need to have that calling, I think. You have to kind of push that discomfort and try to build that calling within yourself. I wouldn't suggest people if they're like really, really scared to take psychedelics. But I'd also suggest people that if they are really scared to look into themselves and ask why, right? Is it that cultural programming, which usually it is, saying that all these mushrooms are going to make you think you're a glass of orange juice for the rest of your life or make you throw yourself out a window. These are all these crazy ideas that the Reagan era propaganda machine thought up in the, you know, late 60s and 70s to kind of push people away from the hippie revolution and get them out of, put them in a state of fear of these things, which is what a lot of us have right now. Virtually everyone I meet that has a fear of psychedelics is based on these propagandized things, you know, not wanting to leave the way they're living or change the way they are. But it has to be something you're really drawn to and called to. If you really want to change, if you really feel like you're not making any headway or progress in your spiritual practice, psychedelics are what we call an option. You know, they're a potential way for you to change that over the course of just a few hours.
Yeah.
Another thing I would say is that when it comes to psychedelics, I've noticed that a lot of people also are afraid of a bad trip and they're worried about having bad trips. But the biggest thing that I've come to realize, especially after not using them for 5 years and then reintegrating them heavily over this past year, is that bad trips really only occur when we're trying to control the experience. So the most beautiful part of the psychedelics experience is that they teach you. If you listen, you can learn a lot from the psychedelic experience. You realize a lot, things kind of become clear. Just like when you're watching a movie or you're listening to comedy and you hear a joke, you get it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be explained to. You just, those aha moments. Mm-hmm. Those come through in spades in the psychedelic experience. And that's why it's so helpful spiritually to help you start to understand what universal oneness is and what this multidimensionality of reality might mean and what it means to have this one life and live it fully. It helps you break through these things you might have never really thought about. But you have to be able to let go in order to do so. The same way that to enjoy a roller coaster, you have to let go of the bars and put your hands up in the air. Mm-hmm. And then once you do that, you're like, I can actually flow with this roller coaster. I'm not like clenching on and hurting myself. Psychedelics are the same way. If you can learn to experience it fully and accept the kind of the discomfort and comfort that comes with it, you'll have these massive, massive, beautiful experiences throughout it.
Man, that's with any psychedelic. Every psychedelic also does have their own unique
experiences. Very different. Very, very different. They're all very different.
What are the ones you've done?
I've only really done mushrooms and psychedelics fully. I've tried DMT when I was younger, but it wasn't something that I would say, I've done DMT.
And so you've only like microdosed.
But LSD. I've done huge doses of LSD as well. Yeah. I did a full dose at Annapurna. I had more. I had more after we were up there. But then there's also like research chemicals, which I don't suggest, like 2CI, 25I, NBOME, all these different research chemicals that came after LSD, which
noted.
Do have toxicity rates and stuff.
Where does LSD come from if it's natural?
LSD is synthesized. So it's synthesized from ergo, like the rye and fungi on bread. So it comes from a fungi, just like psilocybin. Yeah. But it was synthesized by Albert Hofmann, the scientist, in I think 1934 or 43, maybe I have him backwards. But he basically was working with these compounds, trying to synthesize pure chemicals, and he spilled some on his hand. And so it's called Bicycle Day. It's actually a holiday for psychedelic users.
Wow.
But it's the day that he discovered LSD, dropped it on his hand, he was riding his bike home and started tripping, just massively tripping in the middle of, I think it's Switzerland or Sweden. But being the scientist he is, he went back to work the next day and dropped more acid on his hand to confirm it was.
Was that,
And then it was. And he realized what he discovered. It shifted his whole life, changed his whole reality, made him rethink God, religion, everything. Terrence McKenna even has this thing where he talks about basically saying that you don't really live life unless you've had a psychedelic experience. Like, if you go to your grave without ever having a psychedelic experience, you can't say you've lived. Damn. Because it's truly opening you up to a new dimension of existence and a new dimension of experience itself. That's why it's also, there's so many different things that go into like having a good trip, you know, and setting the intentions before you trip. Having somebody trip sit you if it's your first time, like having someone sober there to take care of you, to like make your drinks and stuff, keep you comfortable if you want to stay indoors. If you're going to be outdoors, making sure it's a safe space you know really well, or you can have somebody again sit with you in, not just going out in the middle of somewhere you don't know and doing it if you've never done it before. There's so many different things that to take into account, you know.
That's probably super important to make sure that you have someone around. There's a lot of probably a lot of reasons why that is immensely important. But what about if you're with somebody super experienced and they're also doing
That's perfect. That's the best thing you can do for your first time is to be with somebody who's already done psychedelics.
Yeah.
Because they kind of are like by de facto a teacher for you. Not a teacher, but a guy.
Once or twice, but
like how when we hiked on a porno, we had a guy with us, and he knows the route. He's done it 50 times. Yeah. He can answer all our questions, quell all our worries and all our fears.
Yeah.
An experienced tripper can do the same thing. So if it's your first time doing mushrooms or LSD and you're with a friend or someone who's done it plenty of times, they can calm you down. They can help you relax. They can confirm everything's okay, all this different stuff.
Right.
Let you know it's going to be fine. Show you easy ways to have deep experiences, like closed eye visuals where you place your hands over your eyes and let the kind of rods and cones in your eyes go crazy and see these fractalized colors and patterns.
Wow.
They can take you outside at night and tell you to look at the stars and take it all in. There's just lots of good things that it's best to do it with somebody who's experienced tripping or the trip sitter. I wouldn't suggest just do it by yourself.
By yourself for your first time.
Yeah.
For sure.
Just because it's leaving yourself open to unpleasant variables. You know, it's unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, and also there's a lot of negative side effects that can happen. For example, with ayahuasca, obviously you need a shaman or somebody with you.
Caretakers, exactly.
Caretakers, you definitely do, because people throw up. They might even have seizures, yada yada.
Yeah.
And so they definitely need a caretaker there. And DMT, I know there's like a burning sensation or something like that.
In DMT, you totally leave your body, like you're gone. They're just kind of watching your body while you're off in consciousness.
Wow, okay. Yeah. Wonderful.
I've had friends do it, and it's almost as if you like slump over, but it's just you're gone into the DMT dimension, and they're just making sure your body's okay while you're there.
That's so interesting. Isn't there, though, like, when you first do it, or there's, like, a cough or, like, a burning cough or throat or something like that, that it's really...
Some people say it smells like burning plastic or something also.
Interesting.
But, yeah, it's usually a cough. Most people smoke it or, like, vaporize it.
Yeah, kind of, vaporize it. Yeah, okay. Yeah. What are some negative side effects that people might need to, like, look out for?
The thing with mushrooms is making sure that you're actually eating psychedelic mushrooms. And that's why it's important to do your research. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't suggest... So when I was in Australia...
Could you have a poisonous one?
What was that?
Could you have a poisonous one?
If you don't know what you're doing. And that's why it's important to do your research, right? That's why in the beginning I'm like, look into Paul Stamets, because he's a really good mycologist, and he has mushroom growers guides and guides that show you the psilocybin mushrooms in your area and like where you live. You can research it as well. That's also, you know, I wish we could talk about where you can get psychedelics, but in certain countries you can just get them in shops, like in Holland and stuff.
Right.
You can get them. It's just about knowing what a psychedelic mushroom looks like, what a psilocybin-based mushroom looks like, where
you live.
What
is psilocybin? It's the psychoactive ingredient.
Psilocybin is like the chemical compound in the mushroom that causes the effect in the brain,
right?
The psychedelic experience. But one way it's easy to see is a lot of the times, at least in Australia, where we were, is that the stem turns blue when it's really dense with psilocybin. It has a reaction to oxygen.
Oh.
So when you know kind of what it looks like as well, just to make sure you can like squeeze the stem and it turns blue, okay, that has psilocybin, and you take them.
That is insane. You lived on a mushroom farm and you were able to just like, basically a mushroom farm.
Lived on a farm with mushrooms, definitely.
Yes.
Most definitely, lots of them. But that's why it's like wherever you're at in the world, you know, if you're in the Pacific Northwest of America, you can research which mushrooms grow in that area.
Yeah.
If you're in Florida, you can research which ones grow in that area.
But for the first time, they should probably just find someone that...
Yeah, if you can find someone that sells them. I mean, I've never in my life met somebody who sells mushrooms who doesn't sell a psychedelic mushroom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not going to just go find a random mushroom in the woods and sell it to you. That'll land them in prison. So that rarely ever happens. If you're getting mushrooms from whoever your like weed dealer is or something, if you have that, they're usually legitimate mushrooms.
Right.
Just make sure they're not giving you like portobello mushrooms or something you're getting ripped off.
Portobello.
It's easier that way. And you can use test kits. Test kits are good ways to do it too, where you put little pieces in it. You can do it with LSD also. They have test kits where you can drop little pieces of your blotter in, or a little piece of the mushroom in, and you shake it up. And if it turns the right color, you know you have the right compound.
Curious about your experience on Aparna.
Yeah. Oh, Annapurna was great. A lot of Annapurna was kind of just feeling the mountain. Mm-hmm. So.
And this is your LSD experience, yes?
Yeah, yeah. This is on LSD and Annapurna. Like, a lot of the hike up there, I just kept thinking that I'm hiking this mountain. I'm hiking up this mountain.
You were pretty, like, singular focused.
Yeah, meditating. Mountains are a very meditative practice for me. I'm in my own zone. I don't talk very much. I'm very in the experience. That's why I figured you were probably having the same really deep, like, experiences for yourself as well, because you were alone a lot of the trek. And I was alone in the front a lot, too.
We were both alone pretty much the entire trek.
Yeah.
And Haley as well, like, all of us were.
And it's really good for your mind to just zone into the moment.
We just needed that time for ourselves, because it would be nice if we had the moments in between where we'd all get together, have some coffee, tea, just socialize a little bit.
And then continue back into our meditative walks.
And
when I got to the top, though, and had the psychedelics, I went up to the big ridge where all the memorials are, and I walked all the way to the back, and I could see the huge drop-off. And the whole time I've been hiking, I kept thinking about how, like, I was hiking this mountain, and I was going up to Annapurna. And the more I got up there and the more I sat there, I started to feel that interconnectedness with the mountain, that I'm not just hiking up Annapurna, that I am Annapurna, that I'm this mountain moving into this giant land mass known as the Indochina, I guess you could say, the Chinese-Russian land mass. I'm not sure what the name of it is. But that I was that I was simultaneously this small moving organic compound, but also the entire, you know, geological structure itself over billions of years, and that my energy just happened to be in this place and time where I could self-perceive it or self-witness it and feel that. And it was really beautiful, like, you know, when you sit up there in the quiet, what's so great is that in the mountain, all you hear is just the rocks cracking and the ice cracking, and this literally, that's what's so powerful about being in a glacial area like that in the Himalayas, is you can hear the earth moving, the entire planet moving in that space.
That was surreal.
Yeah, the crust of the earth bending below the other one, and one rising and rising and rising. And usually things like impermanence can scare us, and how short and quick the, you know, human experience is. But when you're in that state, the LSD kind of opens you up to, like, how beautiful it is. It stops being a scary thing. And that's a lot of what the spiritual path is, too, is can you love the fear as much as you love the joy, right? Can you love the pain as much as you love the happiness or the pleasure? And so LSD really opens that up, and that's what I was feeling. It's like not scared or not sad that my life is so short in comparison to, say, the mountain that is Annapurna being millions of years old. It's more so a thankfulness that I get to experience that thought at all, that realization that, wow, I'm something right here, seeing some other aspect of myself.
That's not even just a thought. I mean, that's really, truly just an embodiment of feeling of oneness.
Yeah. Like, and that's what it felt like.
Pure oneness.
And then what was also really interesting was that when we went down the mountain, before we went down, I went out at that. I had a smaller amount at first and went out and sat there and was kind of taking that in. And then went back before I filmed, I took some more. So I had a little bit, but I figured I would go a little deeper and I took some more. And that's when I went and filmed a few videos. But once we started heading back down the mountain, this huge cloud rolled in above us, that giant cloud. And it overtook everything. At first, you could see the entire mountain and all the range and everything and the blue sky and this huge, thick cloud sort of crawling up the mountain, because in this mountain range, the wind is so strong that it blows up from the valley into the Annapurna mountain range and drops all the snow and rain there. So this cloud was literally climbing up the mountain, something I've never seen before. I usually see clouds going down, this cloud was going up over us. And I felt almost like a dinosaur. Like, I was in, like, thousands of years ago and feeling this kind of spatial difference between this era and that era, and how these mountains were still there, and just trying to perceptualize these shifts in time, how far and wide they can be, because one thing humans are really bad at is time and, like, distance. We can understand things from 1 to 100, but when we get to, like, thousands and tens of thousands and millions, our brain just physically is not strong enough or mentally capable of processing that, like, size difference. So it was really interesting not to feel like I didn't feel like I was a physical, like, T-Rex or something, but I felt like that prehistoric age and the plants and ficuses up there are so ancient, and just living in the middle of winter somehow, it felt very, very ancient, very, very classical.
Wow.
And it was this really cool experience of bridging those like timelines of these mountains were still there when the dinosaurs were here. They were still there in the Jurassic era and the Triassic era and the Paleolithic era.
Yeah.
So it was really, really cool to be up in that space and be feeling that, and doing so, you know, in that state was, you know, a really unique experience. It was a lot of fun.
Powerful.
And it's one of the few areas you can see that, you know, when we're in a city right now filming this podcast, and you can't be here and say, oh, this is all something that I can relate to hundreds of thousands of years ago being here.
I know.
Even the lakes, you know, lakes change, but these mountain ranges are some of the oldest on the entire planet.
Well, you can see, I remember someone, it was you, that was like, it almost looks Jurassic Park. And I was looking around and I was thinking about that too. And as a child, because I grew up in Utah, and apparently, I mean, we have like our dinosaur areas. Yeah. And I would just like look around as a little girl, because you're so imaginative at the time, and I would just picture the different dinosaurs roaming around those lands.
Yeah.
And so I would have my own, I guess, trips as a child. But I was so curious about your experience and that oneness, that pure oneness that you got to feel. I think that is, though it's a concept, I understand and I feel and I see when I really deeply connect with others and nature. It's something that I really want to fully embody, and as I know that that's truth.
All is in the one, and the one is in all.
Yeah. We're all just an extension of the same thing. And so when we're tracking that, we're all part of our consciousness, part of ourselves that we're checking. And so that was beautiful.
Yeah, and that's what, like, one of the final things I realized on it, too, was down at the base when you were kind of asking, and I was like, I'm still tripping a bit.
Yeah.
Was that, like, the devil really is in the details, as in, like, details cause us to fall out of oneness, you know? So when we got down to our, the lower base camp, we were staying for the night, my trip was still going pretty strong, and everyone was in the other room, and you guys were all in your rooms, and I was sitting out on that boulder, but I was watching this huge boulder off in the distance, and since the fog was so strong, it was so strong that the boulder almost started disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed in my own psyche that the denser the fog got, the more beautiful the boulder appeared, because it was just this outline of the boulder. And it was very soft, and it meshed almost with the fog, and the colors were very soft and gentle. And I could kind of feel that unionization, that fading into of each other, the fog and the boulder. But then as soon as the fog would let up, I could see the whole boulder, and I could see the crags and the cracks and the imperfections and the water stains and the quote-unquote ugliness. You know, your ego mind gets in and goes, oh, this boulder has a chip there, and it's not as pretty here as it is over there. And those plants are kind of ugly because they're like a really weird brown color. And all those details make something uglier, makes it separate. And every time that the fog would let up, I would see just the boulder, and it would be like almost this like sandpaper in my mind.
Yeah.
It would just be very uncomfortable. And then as soon as this fog got really dense again, it would merge back into this beautiful, like, hewish, greenish, brownish, blackish color that merged into the fog. And so it made me realize how much that the reason it's so hard for us to feel that oneness is because we get so caught up in perceiving things and identifying things and detailing every little thing we do. And that's why for me, like, you guys kind of noticed when we were hiking, is I'm just kind of flowing with things.
Yeah.
Because I noticed for my mind, just like the trip showed me, is that the more I identify stuff, the less I love it. Because your ego just keeps trying to rip things apart and pick things apart and nitpick everything, because that's what we do in the West. We individualize everything rather than seeing reality as the collective consciousness it is, the oneness it is. So it was a really good reminder for me to step back and stop doing that. And, you know, not just to do it when I'm on acid in the mountains looking at a boulder in the fog, but even now in like Pokhara in the middle of this Nepalese city, while I'm walking down the sidewalk, not nitpick all these little things, but just kind of see the blur of being that's kind of playing in front of me. So just little things like that are what psychedelics teach you and show you. And then your choice when you experience that is, am I going to take this as a one-off trip that I can, you know, geek out about, or am I going to actually write this down and try to practice this in my life? And that's why setting intentions is so important. And again, deciding where and when you trip is really important too.
That was beautiful. I remember actually you told me to sit there when you were like, still, you're, I asked you and you're like, you know, you should meditate and stare at that boulder and watch the fog go in and out. It's really cool. And so I did.
I was experiencing too much to explain what I had seen yet, but I was like, you should maybe just look at the boulder.
Yeah, I got it. That was really, maybe, and I did. It was beautiful. I did see what you saw, but I do see how that would actually be such an interesting experience, because you can see also that when the boulder does come into full detail, you're reminded, like, oh, when they clear everything and everything is released, like, this is the purity of what it actually is. Mm-hmm. And it's all imperfect.
Yeah.
Vishuddha, I love you.
Love you too.
So much. I'm so thankful that we've had this experience.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's good to chat before you head off to, where are you going next?
Well, Kathmandu, but then Kathmandu. Bali.
Bali, yeah. Have fun in Bali. I'll be in South Korea next.
I am so excited for your South Korea, then Japan. Just a few days. Yeah. By the way, 3 years ago when we met, or he said that there are two places he hadn't traveled yet in the world.
None.
He was like, when I do though, there are two stops that I have to make, and that are India and Japan.
Yeah.
And guess what? He's got India checked. That was like your
5
world.
Months in India.
Yeah, 5 months, no big
Great
deal.
Great time.
And Japan is coming up. So this is like huge for
manifestation,
this anime lover.
Practice. Manifestation in action.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm excited for it.
Well, Jai Ma.
Jai Ma.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Dear Yomis, thank you so much, so much for lending your ear and taking time, valuable time for your soul to listen to this episode today. I am honored to provide this for you, and I hope something in this spoke to you and shifted you in some way. I would love to personally connect with your soul on, well, of course, IRL, but also on the Instagrams or the Facebooks. My Instagram, which I am finally active on, is at Raquel Mantra, that is spelled Raquelle Mantra. I'll put that in the show notes. And make sure to not only see and respond to all the comments, but also send love back to you, because why not? And then for you to also connect with me and this powerful tribe of like-minded individuals, high-vibing individuals to raise your vibrations, feel free to join us in the Your Own Magic Secret Facebook group. That will also be left in the show notes. And feel free to browse yourownmagic.life. I have some free guided meditations on there and more information about upcoming retreats and events. And of course, my offering, my service, is the Soul Tribe exclusive site, which is $44.44 USD. This is for life, for you to receive many meditations. And the most recent one was to help you reprogram your subconscious mind to see your highest potential in a hypnotic state. For example, like reprogramming your subconscious mind to see your highest potential while you're in a hypnotic state, along with others like activating your third eye, or short, simple ones to ease you into your morning or alleviate anxiety, and a lot of deep imaginings, which I love to do personally, is to just visualize and expand my imagination so I can be more creative in my day. In addition to that, other soul expanding journalings to ask yourself every morning, and magic challenges and other spiritual rituals, yada yada. Anyway, I love you all so much. Thank you so much for listening, and have a magical day.